Hey everyone, a quick word from our friends at Phillies Nation before we get started today. If you haven't heard already, the Phillies will be playing two games against the Mets in London next June. That's right, London, England. And our friends at Fans of Philly are offering super fun travel packages with everything planned. All you have to do is pack a bag and show up. Visit fansofphilly.com, that's P-H-A-N-S, of Philly.com for details and deposits. Morning. It's another fine week in Phillies land, ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages. Welcome to another week. Welcome to another episode of Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer. Coming off the really great spectacle that was the Little League Classic, Little League Showcase in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, where the Phillies mounted a late rally and fell short in dropping their weekend series to the Nationals. They still sit 2.5 games clear of the wild card with a big old series coming up this week against the San Francisco Giants. Joined with me, as always, is the Athletic's Matt Gelb, who was out there in Williamsport for Sunday's festivities. Matt, how are you?
You're looking live at my Fairfield Inn in Hazleton, PA,
the Pokemon,
where I had to stop last night because decided that I could not keep driving or else I might drive off the road because I was so tired. And, you know, I kind of feel, you know, how it's a long day, you know, for the players. It's a fun day. Yeah, I wrote about it, you know, kind of trying to capture the day at the, you know, wrote about it at the Athletic. And, you know, it is extremely commercialized.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is made for TV. And even the most jaded people like me can appreciate it, though. It was some cool moments, especially, you know, the Phillies in the stands cheering on a team from media that, you know, ended up losing that game. But it was really cool. I mean, it was like legit. It was not fake. And there were a lot of interactions that I saw over the course of the day that were not fake. So I get why MLB keeps coming back here. I'm not so sure that they should keep repeating teams. I mean, this is the second time the Phillies did it in 5 years. And I also think that if they, Bryce Harper actually suggested this, and I think he's dead on. Like, if they want to do this, like, they should have the big league teams come on Saturday, you know, have a day, you know, to watch some of the games, interact with the kids, have clinics, or do whatever, you know, and then play the game on Sunday. You know, that would require some schedule finagling. But I also think the team should have an off day after the day. And the Nationals are actually off today. The Phillies are not. The Phillies instead, Paul, have a, you know, are starting a really big series at Citizens Bank Park. And they flew home last night, you know, pretty quick flight from Williamsport, but it was a long day. And I expect them to have a pretty late report time today, probably like a show and go, maybe even no BP. And Gabe's Giants, Gabe's back. He's back.
Yes, he is. The San Francisco Giants, who are the Phillies' closest competition right now for that top wild card spot. You know, just to touch on the Little League Classic one more time before we move on to the existential. No,
I just want to talk about Gabe. You know,
I know the existential crisis that playing the Giants gives me. It's time for my twice annual meltdown. It really is, from an outsider's perspective, one of the cooler things on the baseball calendar to me. And I like the little flourishes that some of the players put in. You know, the number two pencil bats.
Really, oh, they're got so cool. Me. Victus did the bats. Yeah, they're really
on,
cool.
Man. Yeah. That was really great. You know, let them do more fun stuff like that at regular games. I think that would be cool. You know, a little bit of a shame that the Phillies end up dropping the series. And you mentioned this before we started taping, that every single loss the Phillies have had to the Nationals this year has been by one run.
Yeah.
Infuriating.
They went 7-6 against the Nats this year.
Oh my God.
And six losses by one run. And, you know, last year, if you recall, I mean, obviously the schedule was different. They played them more. The Phillies went 16-3 against Washington last year. And that was a really big reason why they made the playoffs. I mean, it might have been the reason why they ended up making the playoffs and winning the National League pennant. So I guess the Nats got them back a little bit this year. But, yeah, I mean, definitely a frustrating, I think, like last 10 days or so. I mean, it goes beyond the Nats series, right? You know, you had a really strong homestand that kind of petered out, like with that loss to the Twins, a series loss, but you face two good pitchers. You're like, all right, Toronto, you go split, you know, you split two games. And it's like one of those games was a late loss on a, you know, a ball that Kyle Schwarber, you know, probably should have caught in left field. And then you drop a series of the Nats, and you know, you're probably more upset about the Friday game than you were the Sunday game in Williamsport. In the Friday game, you get a big lead, and then Johan Rojas drops the ball, and you're like, man, I mean, like that's a game the Phillies, you know, really should have won. And
yeah, for sure.
Then you look up and you're like, I don't know, like this is them. Like, you know, they remain in quite good standing with regards to the playoff picture. They remain 10 games over 500. You know, with like a 85% chance of making the playoffs, like all that stuff, like trending in the right direction. You know, they come home again for an extremely long homestand. I believe it's another 9-gamer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the Giants and a struggling Cardinals team and a struggling Angels team that's fighting for their lives. I do believe Otani's going to start one of those games in that series. That'll be really cool.
Mm.
But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's like some maddening losses in there. You know, that 5-game road trip that included, you know, 3 cities and 2 countries, you know, you lost 3 games by 1 run.
Yeah.
And you won 2 games. So it's not as if they are playing horrendously right now, but it doesn't make it any less frustrating, right?
No, definitely not. You know, we keep talking at this time of year about how important it is to just bank the wins, you know, however you can get them. And it was a little bit unfortunate this week, but this is what this team is. And it's what they were last year in a slightly different composition. You know, like you said, you look up at the standings, they're 10 games over 500 and a 540 winning percentage through now, which is what they have at 67 and 57, is an 87-88 win pace over a full season. That is what a team of this caliber does. They drop some stupid games. They pick up a couple that they should win or shouldn't win. You know, kind of goes back and forth. In their last 10, the Phillies are 5-5. In their last 30, they're 15-15. You know,
that's like, great.
You know, the last 20, they're 11-9. And there's the differentiator, right? That builds up over the course of the year, right? Your two games over.
I did not know that. That's perfect. 15-15. That's
perfect. You know, your 2 games over in your in a 20 game stretch, you pile that up 8 times. And then what do you have? You have a, you know, high 80s win team. Now, this is what they are. And that's fine. You know, this is a team that's playoff caliber. The National League is weak. We keep saying this. They drop games and nobody's really making them pay for it yet, I think is the big thing. You know, they go 2-5 since last weekend and they've barely lost any ground. You know, the other teams in this race are doing them as much of a favor as they do when they win themselves.
Yeah. And it's like, even if, you know, you want to see them win the series against the Giants, but it's like, even if they lose the series against the Giants, you're like, okay, you know, I don't know. I mean, and we'll talk more about the Giants, but it's just like, yeah, what team do you see right now? Like, I'm sure one of these teams is going to go on a hot streak.
Yeah.
Like, it's bound to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, like, the Cubs are kind of interesting to me. The Marlins have played better, but then, you know, Yuri Perez strikes out like 10 Dodgers and they lose the game 3-1, and then they lose another game 3-1.
Yep.
Against the Dodgers. So it's like, I don't know.
Marlins are doing the thing we kind of expected them to do. Granted, when you come up against the Dodgers in their annual, you know, 55-6 stretch, you know, middle of the season, this is what they do to everybody. But the Marlins are falling off the pace, and I think we were all kind of expecting that and looking for that to happen. They're still very much in the mix, don't get me wrong, but they don't seem like they're that strong of a contender right now. Meanwhile, you mentioned the Giants, who are rolling in and who I now begrudgingly have to start talking about. They are 2 games back of the Phillies for the number 4 seed, the top wild card. Losing this series, you're right, would not be the biggest deal. You do not want to get swept. I know there's still a lot of runway, but I'd rather not see these teams get flipped by the end of this series. But you look ahead, as we tend to do and we like to do, in the schedule a couple weeks out. After that Angels series, it is a wild card bonanza with 3 on the road in Milwaukee, 3 on the road in San Diego, and then 3 at home against Miami before a Braves series. And, you know,
the Braves will probably have clinched by then, no?
They probably would, but that
that's like, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic with the Braves, right? I mean, like, they're not going to play it's got so many shades of like 2011 Phillies to me. Again, because they're not going to play. They're going to play very few meaningful games in September. And then they're going to have like, you know, 5 or 6 days off after the season ends. And they have a really good coaching staff, and they have such a great roster. So it's like they're going to find ways to stay sharp. But
yeah,
that would scare me. Right.
Sure. I get that. You know, a lot's being made about how all the Braves regulars are playing every day, you know,
yeah, and they have chances to sit.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Right. Like this isn't going to be a case where I don't know who's missed how many games or if anybody's in the mix for getting 162 under their belt at this point. Maybe Acuna and Riley, but there's Olson maybe. It seems like there's little chance that they all just keep playing through to the end. They're so probably far out in front. They're going to lock up the number one seed. Probably. Well, I can't say that. So if the Dodgers keep doing this, though, like do the Braves have to keep playing for the top spot? Yeah. Like they're four games separate.
The Dodgers
have
also been playing So they're not going to win every game the rest of the way. What did they have? Like an 11 game winning streak? What is it now? 12?
They've been doing this for how many years now? Who's to say they won't? You know?
I mean, yeah, they had an 11 game winning streak and they lost one. And then they won, you know, then they swept a double header.
So. Yeah. So this is just what they do. So, I mean, it would be great if the Braves felt like they had a little bit less to play for by the time the series rolled around. That would be fantastic. I would take all the help I could get for sure. I'm not so convinced. And no matter who's playing for Atlanta, if they're wearing that jersey, they give this team fits. So this is a big stretch and it all starts tonight, right? But the Phillies are at home. They have three against the Giants, who I cannot figure out. I look at this team, right? 65 and 59.
This is not a good team.
I look at this roster and
they have a two-man rotation.
How did they get to this point where they're still so not just in the mix, but in the number five seed, 120 games in? I'm saying this now, and I'm fully accepting and stipulating that something so awful and traumatizing is going to happen that will make me go blind for a few minutes after a game ends. I get that. That's just what the Giants do to my brain. But I look at this team, and I'm just like, this doesn't scream playoff caliber team. It doesn't look like a team that should be this thick in the mix at this point in the year. And yet in that Giants way where they pluck these wins and contending teams out of the ether, here they are. And they're on the doorstep of, you know, coming into our park and potentially claiming the top wildcard spot by the time the series is over. They're in that position. It doesn't make a lot of sense to look at a roster that so prominently features starting first baseman Lamont Wade Jr. as its, you know, qualified OPS plus leader.
Do you know who played shortstop for the Giants the last 2 days?
Who played shortstop the last? Yeah, because Brandon Crawford's hurt. Who was playing there?
Johan Camargo. Yeah.
It came to me as soon as you. Yes, Johan Camargo is back.
Here, I got some numbers for you, all right?
Okay. We love numbers.
The Giants' bullpen has pitched 131 and a third more innings than the Phillies.
Whoa. That's more than an inning more per game by this point. That's crazy.
Right. And yeah, obviously, like, you know, they've been, you know, doing different things with their pitching.
Wow.
They have literally a two-man rotation, and they use openers every other day, basically. They'll use an opener in the first game of the series, and then Paul, they're calling up Kyle Harrison, who's you know, by all accounts a really good prospect. I think going into the season he was like a top 20 prospect.
Yeah.
You know, on most of the list, maybe like top 30. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got decent numbers at AAA, not great. It's a Pacific Coast League, you know, it's a tough league. Here's a question for you, Paul.
Okay.
How many times do you think this season, Kyle Harrison, who's made 21 starts,
okay,
how many times do you think he's pitched more than five innings?
Oh, this is great. This is shades of Tim Lincecum in 2007, by the way. I'm going to say in 21 starts, I'm going to say six.
He's pitched more than five innings zero times.
Oh.
He's pitched more than he's pitched four innings five times
in 21 starts.
Yes.
So what you're saying
is he's coming up. He's not going to be, he's no. going to pitch three innings.
Yeah.
And like, he's doing this in Triple A. The most pitches he's thrown, the most pitches he's thrown since July 4th is 60.
Really?
Yes. And so like, there's a lot of hype around this guy, and it sounds like he's a, you know, a really good prospect. It's like, I don't get this. I don't get anything about this. I don't get anything about the Giants. They have a good bullpen. Camilo Duvall is a fantastic closer.
Yes.
Who Gabe has tried to murder, it seems like, at every turn, and he's still there. He's still standing. He threw 29 pitches and got five outs Sunday. He hadn't pitched in a while. You know, that'll be kind of interesting to see if he comes back, if there's another situation for him Monday night.
Yeah.
You know, the Rogers twins, you know, have had, you know, solid years, really solid years.
I love Taylor Rogers.
One of their best pitchers is on the paternity list. I think he's coming back at some point for the series. Ryan Walker, it's this guy who starts like three games a week for them because he just pitches like 40 pitches every other day and, you know, starts like two or three games a week for them. It is a really weird team, and it's very Gabe. I mean, like, they're trying to squeeze as much as they can as roster. They're running like four or five different platoons. They don't have a great roster, but they've squeezed a lot out of it. They are right there. And it's going to be, yes, it's going to be maddening to watch, because no doubt there will be annoying things the Giants do, and you're going to look up and be like, why is this team?
This is the thing I'm talking about, okay? Ryan Walker, who you just mentioned. I know every team has a couple of these stories throughout the year. You know, the Phillies have it with Wes Wilson homering in his first career plate appearance. Like, they're sprinkled in here. I just feel like the Giants do this more. Again, I get really, I get real super objective and fact-based when talking about the Giants here. Ryan Walker, 31st round pick in 2018, coming up and doing this as a 27-year-old rookie is exactly the kind of guy I would feel like would show up. You know, maybe he'll be back. I don't know what his deal is. Maybe he'll be back Tuesday or Wednesday. Maybe he shows up for one of the later games and, you know, throws two or three shutout innings. You know, that's what this feels like. That's what the Giants say to me. These guys who were just completely out of nowhere just arrive and just shut everything down.
Who was the guy who was like the epitome of that in their glory years? He was like a first baseman who floated around, and he had some big postseason hits. And I can't.
Travis Ishikawa.
Yes. Travis Ishikawa.
That's
yes.
the thing. These yeah. weird names just, they stick with you. Ishikawa didn't even really do that to the Phillies. It's just the Giants as an entity have these guys who just by association achieve this mark. They have a corner of my brain where they just sit there and just get lodged. And I just have to access them every time this series comes up, whether they're going out west or they're back east, when I can't claim that I'm falling asleep by the time the disaster happens in these games.
It comes back to this. Boy. It's like, you know, we can debate this. Like, we're talking about the Giants. Sure. This is a Phillies podcast, but the Giants are, I do believe, like, the Phillies' best challenger here to get that four seed. And honestly, like, how funny would it be if they do end up matching up in Philadelphia in the first week of October? I mean, it would be quite the thing, I think, because of all the plot lines.
It would certainly be a thing.
I do think there's some cracks right now in the Giants Foundation, and you can see it in some of the comments and some of the, you know, Gabe has been, you know, pushing back on a lot of reporters, it looks like, and a lot of angry fans. Does that sound familiar? You know, Alex Wood, a veteran pitcher, you know, really critical of how the Giants have been using their pitchers of late.
Yes.
You know, Brandon Crawford got pinch hit for a bunch, you know, the last few weeks. Now he's on the injured list. You know, just these little things that you're like, oh, I remember that. you remember that feeling? You know what I remember? It was funny because I was before the game yesterday in Williamsport, I was standing with Reese Hoskins. They were just talking. Reese was, you know, sharing some funny memories, like from when he played rookie ball at Williamsport for the Crosscutters. Mm. And I was saying to Reese, I said, do you know what I remember about the game 5 years ago that the Phillies played against the Mets? Gabe was a manager, obviously. You know, it was about the time where things were starting to go kind of bad.
Nick Pivetta got shelled, I remember.
2018, yeah. And I said to Reese, I had to double check this to remember this, but it was the first time that Gabe put Carlos Santana at third base. It was in the middle of the game, and Reese started laughing, and Reese is like, it wasn't even to get me to first base. And he was right. Reese played left field in that game. He did not play first base, even though Santana played third. Do you remember who played first base so that Carlos Santana could move over to third?
Oh, no, I don't. I do not. Who was it?
Justin Bour.
Oh, it was that time of year. Oh, that's right. It was August. Wow. What fond memories.
That's what Gabe is trying to do with this with the Giants roster. I mean, there's so many similarities. I can see it. People who are real sickos and watch the Phillies those years and really, really focused on how the team was run, how the roster was run, you're going to have terrible flashbacks this week as you watch the Giants.
You know, and is it a matter of necessity, or do we think this is just how Gabe Kapler managed teams are going to be managed as long as he has a managerial position? Like, is this just what he's going to do regardless of the personnel? Or is this a case of the 2023 Giants kind of being like the 2017 Phillies, where they have all these guys who just sort of mishmash and aren't great fits for multiple positions?
Is this necessary? My answer would be unequivocally no.
Okay.
Hey. Look, Farhan Zaidi is, I think, a terrific executive. And he...
Sure.
I think there's been a lot of criticism levied of him because they haven't gone out and gotten the big fish. And I think that's totally fair. And I think they've made some weird investments. Like, you know, Mitch Haniger, surprise, is hurt again. I mean, they invested, you know, decent money in him. And he isn't very good. Hasn't had, you know, really any time on the field for them this year. You know, surprise. No. Their trade deadline was absolutely friggin' bizarre. And AJ Pollock was their big addition. He's also on the injured list again now.
Even bigger surprise there, yeah.
I think the match, you know, the pairing of Farhan and Gabe, two guys who are endlessly curious and willing to push the limits on just about every conventional baseball practice. This is the result. And when you're winning, it's fine. And we saw it here. Like, when they were winning, you know, and in very unusual and unexpected ways with Gabe Kapler as the manager, it was fun. It was interesting. It was like, this isn't normal, but okay, it's working. So I'll give it a pass for now. But the counter to that, Paul, is that like when it starts going bad, it gets really, really, really bad, because then you have players in the clubhouse all of a sudden being like, okay, I could justify them using me in unusual ways when we were winning, when the team was doing well. But now I'm looking around and being like, is this helping the team? Is this helping me? Is any of this good? And that's why I feel like the Giants are on a really dangerous sort of edge here. And the Phillies could really push them over. The Giants go home after this series and they play the Braves again in San Francisco. They just played the Braves this past week in Atlanta. Then they also get the Reds after that. So I think it's a good team that reminds me so much of those 2018, 2019 Phillies, when you got to this time of year and you're thinking, is this thing really going to work?
I would love to make that answer no, just to be on the other side of it. It would be nice, you know, just in general, to put a little more space between you and your closest competition, but also to try and help me exercise some of these demons, because I don't want to feel terrible Babadook level dread every time I see the Giants coming up on the schedule. I would like to be past that. We're going on like 15 years of this crap now.
Well, to exercise your demons, don't the Phillies have to play the Giants in October and beat them? Isn't that what happens, right?
No,
to avenge Roy Oswalt as a reliever, and,
you know,
avenge Roy Halladay pitching with a torn groin.
Matt, I'm going to say no as the answer to that. I think it's very effective as a method of cleansing, you know, as purifying goes. I don't think it's necessary for me. I think there is a way, when you're not talking about like a divisional rival, I guess, in my case, where if you're able to string together, and it takes some time at this point, if you're able to string together what would have to be, you know, two seasons worth of decisive series victories, comfortable series victories. So, you know, what would that end up being, 12 games or something like that for an East-West showdown? Then I could start feeling better. I don't have a memory I can recall where the Phillies have just comfortably walked over the Giants for, you know, 1 year, let alone two, and let me feel a little more at ease. Maybe it means I have to stare down a playoff matchup. Maybe it means that's what I have to face. Maybe that is the exposure therapy that could finally do it for me. I don't know. I don't really want to find out, but I guess that's part of the whole thing and why we get a little bit meta at this case. Maybe that is the kind of therapy I in particular would need to help me finally get over, you know, 2010, and not just 2010, but the years surrounding it in those regular seasons.
But really 2010.
But really 2010, where things just always seem to fall off the rails at least once a series, and not even in like a fun Mets series kind of way, you know, like even with the Mets games going off the rails. I remember sitting and watching the 7-run collapse last year and just kind of laughing to myself.
Norwood game,
you know? Yeah. I'm just kind of laughing like, all right, this is insane. It felt different, even though it's a division rival who I should, by all right, hate more. That's even the right word. I have a weird approach to fandom.
Such a strong word.
It is such a strong word. We got to use a little less. If the Giants did that, if that happened in a Giants game, I would still be in the fetal position here a year later. I wouldn't be recovered. And I don't know what it is that just makes me react so strongly to this. So I look at this series coming up, you know, and really just hope. I want to take it. I want to win two of three. I would even accept if the one loss came in an insane way, you know, giving up a 3-run inside the park home run at the top of the ninth inning. I don't know. Like, just concoct a nightmare. Fine. It can happen. If the Phillies win the other two games, I'd take that trade.
Right, so how would you feel if they did not win the series? Like, what would your kind of view of the team be? Would it be changed?
No, because the objective soul within me knows that things are still fine. If they drop two of three and the Giants pick up a game, there's still a game back of the Phillies in the standings. And that's really what it comes down to. You got to pick up at least one here. You can't get swept. I don't want to see a sweep. I don't want to see the teams get flipped. I don't want to see the Giants in the fourth spot after this week, after the middle of this week. I just don't want to see that. That's a psychological thing that I would just rather not see as we come up into the latter stages of August. There's still plenty of time. We talk about this a lot at this point of the year, and we've talked about it for a couple of weeks now. There's still runway. There's still time. If they do drop the series, okay. Even if they get swept, God forbid, they're still okay. But you're at home. You have a chance to put a little bit of distance between yourself and your closest competitor.
Yeah.
Even with the whole, you know, the ethos of being a mid to high 80s win team that we were just talking about, being you don't always come through and decisively say, no, we have this. This is ours. We're going to seize it from you. We're going to put the boot on the neck kind of thing. It doesn't really feel like that's been the Phillies thing the last couple of years. A little weird to say. Again, they went to the World Series. I get that. But they have a chance here to you know, get that stiff arm extended, push the Giants out a little bit more, get them a little bit further back into the pack, maybe get lapped by one or two of these other teams in the mix, because it's six teams for three spots right now, if we're excluding the Padres. And you need to keep banking these wins. And this is a chance to do it. You're at home. You play better at home. Do it.
Padres are seven games under 500. It's August 21st. I'm sorry. The Padres are not going to be.
I know. I'm losing my grip on the Padres thing. They didn't really do anything this week. It's hard to look at their season right now as anything other than one of the weirdest underperformances that I may ever see. So much talent and their positive run differential and their 0-10 in extra innings.
Do you agree that the Giants are the best challenger to the Phillies in that first round?
Yes, because of demons, but also because I look at these other teams. I would say the Cubs are close the way the Cubs are playing right now. I just kind of have to buy into
for a while.
Yeah, he is. But if he comes back for, you know, October, then things get a little bit different there. And the way they've been playing, I kind of have no choice but to think that they're pretty legit. It's strange. You know, I wasn't expecting them to be in the mix like this, but
yeah, like the Cubs postseason rotation right now would be like Justin Steele, Jameson Taillon, Kyle Hendricks.
If Stroman's out, yeah, probably.
Oh man, that's not good.
Well, no, but it's not great.
I don't know. I'm just, this is about not whether they're better than the Phillies or whatever. Like, this is me trying to, like, Giants or Cubs. Like, which one is a bigger challenger? And I'm probably leaning Cubs because I think it's a much better lineup. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Well, I think we can all agree still that we're not seeing any difference in the Diamondbacks and Reds. They can kind of hit. They need to hit in order to win. And when they don't hit, well, they play like they've been playing lately. You know, the Diamondbacks are 8-12 in their last 20. The Reds are 7-13.
You know what they say.
It's just
good pitching always beats good hitting in playoffs.
You know, they do say that. It does. They do say that, Matt. I've heard that once or twice.
And I believe that. I do believe that that's true. I do.
All right. So let's think about it then from an outsider's perspective. Okay. What would a fan of one of those other teams think when they look at the Phillies, right? Let's turn it the other way. We have Zach Wheeler, who's very good. And I think anybody could say, okay, yes, that's a guy you would not be excited to face as ideally the first starter in a playoff series. But then after that, let's get a little critical. All right. Let's think we're fans of other teams and let's take a slightly negative look more than usual.
I mean, I guess. Beatable. They're very beatable.
They are.
Those are definitely beatable. I mean, there's no question.
Aaron Nola has underperformed severely, and his future now with this organization is in doubt coming up on his free agency. Taiwan Walker, you don't know what you're going to get night in, night out. Ranger is hurt again. And by again, we mean for, you know, the fifth time in 5 years or whatever it is. Like, he's having a hard time staying healthy. Chris Sanchez is on a bit of a roll, but is unproven. You know, I don't know if anybody on the outside would really think of Chris Sanchez as a name they'd be afraid of. Maybe they'd be taken by surprise. And the bullpen's been good, so I think you can say, all right, you wouldn't want to get into the late innings with, you know, a deficit. But also, the lineup is in and out. They've enjoyed a nice stretch here in August, but came up on, you know, a bit of lackluster performances this past week. You don't necessarily think that the names on paper are performing up to standards. Maybe you come in feeling pretty good if you're an opposing fan thinking of taking on the Phillies. I don't know. Like, maybe we could say the same thing about our own club that we're saying about a team like the Cubs or a team like the Giants.
I mean, no doubt. They're very beatable. Like, I don't think... I think Phillies have their flaws. I mean, it's very clear. And, like, if their star hitters aren't performing, like, it looks like a lineup that can be beat. I do think out of all these teams that we've discussed, like, the Phillies do have the best pitching, I think. And I do think that plays in October. I mean, more options. Like, you know, yes, very, very reasonable, fair, and frightening questions about Aaron Nola. Like, no doubt. I do think the Phillies have just more guys that you could throw into a postseason game where you're like, okay, I reasonably trust this guy. I mean, I trust him a lot, but I reasonably trust this guy to get big outs in a big game in October against a good team. And so I do think that puts them a leg up. But yeah, no doubt. I think this is a team very much with flaws, just like they were last year, and certainly beatable. I mean, it helps that Brandon Marsh is back. You know, like he was activated Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Jose Alvarado is going to be activated on Monday, and they're encouraged.
Awesome.
You know, really how he came out of the minor league games. And, you know, I think there's certainly a level of worry with him because you just don't really know. I mean, it's been twice this year now that he's had, you know, some elbow soreness. And so you're kind of like, okay, what, you know, when does it come back? Or, like, is he really, you know, is he really totally healed?
Yeah,
like,
let's see. Sure.
You know, but getting, you know, like April Alvarado back would be quite good. Even like 80% of that would be quite good for the Phillies. Just would let them use Soto in different spots, middle of the game. I think that could be a big boost for them. But, you know, Nola in the first game tonight, you know.
Yeah,
that... he's got a chance to really like turn things around. I mean, this is, that's how you have to look at it. It's an opportunity for him, and if he does not take that opportunity, then just really adds to what has been a disappointing season for him.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that's the angle to take. Maybe that's the angle to take here, right? You're talking about exercising the Giants' demons by seeing them in the playoffs, and I get that. We can think of Aaron Nola potentially moving past what has been two-thirds of a letdown season by putting together a nice stretch run here, right? Kind of almost in the way he had that start in Houston in the clinch game last year, before the World Series, obviously. Where we can start thinking about his season a little differently. Turner's doing the same thing on the offensive side right now, right? Like we're gonna think back to the August 4th standing ovation day as his turning point, where he.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is Nola's. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What? It's never too late to start. Yep. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's all for nothing. Every start for Nola from here on out is a chance to start that. To start that flipping of the narrative that he's built up for this year, and maybe even potentially alter the course of the rest of his career, whether he ends up staying in Philadelphia or not.
I think he would love to beat Gabe Kapler.
Do you?
That's all.
Yeah. There's probably a few guys in the clubhouse who have circled this series. We've been looking forward to this.
What's crazy is that there's just not, it's like not a lot of guys left, right? Like from 19.
You know,
team.
That's a good point.
It's just Harper.
That's a good point. Harper, Realmuto, Nola. Yeah, Wheeler got signed before. Yeah.
No, Wheeler was after.
He was the short season. Yeah.
Dominguez, who a lot of people think Kapler ruined. That's it. It's like four or five guys. Who played for Gabe?
The fedora, crazy, huh? The fedora picture.
The fedora game. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So there's
so many memories.
Oh, so many great memories. What a good time that was. This is a different team. You're right. I am the constant here. It is my own projections and my own insecurities that are finding.
Well, I mean, Gabe is 12-3 against the Phillies since he was fired.
Oh yeah. Oh, I know.
And he will never, ever, ever admit to the games meaning a little more to him, especially the games in Philly. But I bet you they do.
I would think so. I mean, that to last two seasons as a manager, which, hey, look, the Phillies' recent managerial history is littered with this kind of stuff. You know, going back to Ryan Sandberg quitting. Joe Girardi lasted only 2.5 years, Kapler 2 years. Like it's been a tough go in the manager seat. And I would think for anybody that has this kind of like acrimonious end with a franchise, as recent Phillies managers have kind of had with this organization, that if you have the chance to come back, yeah, you probably have a bit of an edge. I would think you would. I mean, unless you're the most Zen human Buddha person out there who's just like, no, what will be, and what, what happens, which I don't think competitive athletes are, then yeah, there's probably something else coming into this game from a motivation side or an emotion side. I would think so. I would think things would run at an extra degree or two. Temperature.
I'm excited for this series. See what happens. I think, yeah.
You know, well, the more we've talked about it, the more I'm getting myself up for it and trying to channel this adrenaline
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies don't have the best like pitching situation here. I mean, you have Nola, who you know you're hoping gives you something, better than it's been. Ty Walker is going to start on Tuesday, and they're encouraged by they do, they measure like every bullpen these guys throw, and they don't always use it. Mm-hmm. But in this case, like they were measuring Walker to see, if there was a little more velo, and it's hard to, how can you get max effort, max juice, throwing a bullpen session in the afternoon? You can't. But they saw some gains in the velocity in the bullpen. I think that's why they're going to go ahead and start him. Not put him on the IL. At this point, if they put him on the IL, I don't know who would even be pitching for them. And then Michael Lorenz is going on regular rest, you know, in the Wednesday game, you know, because they had to put Ranger Suarez on the injured list.
I'm a little worried about Ranger, just for kind of a quick tangent before we wrap up here. Has the hamstring been bothering him for longer maybe than has been letting on? Because, you know, really since the calendar flipped to July, this is a guy who's not really looking so great. You can kind of tell how a start is going to go with him by whether he walks two or fewer or three. That's usually my barometer with him.
He's given up a lot of hits.
There have been a lot of hits too, which is also not helping things. I'm just looking at his last eight starts here. And this is coming off a really nice run, especially in June where he was fantastic. But since July, you know, strikeouts have dipped. He's only got 39 in 46 and change innings. He's walked 20 in those 46 and 30 innings. And this is a guy, remember, who famously walked one guy in 80 some innings in one of his first professional years and has never really been known to be much of a wild child or an erratic pitcher. He usually has good control of the strike zone. To see that number kind of makes me think, you know, 2, 4, 6, 7 of these last eight starts have been multi-walk starts. It's very unusual for him.
Has it been bothering him more than he's let on? I don't know, because he won't let on.
Well, yeah, okay.
I talked to him for a little bit yesterday. Sure. I don't know. He says it's like he said he thinks he could have kept pitching. He doesn't think it's a big deal, but I don't know. He says that he doesn't really know how it happened. He said it really only started bothering him recently. So I don't know. I guess you have to take him at his word, but I agree. I mean, like, I think the even more than the walks ball is like, there's a lot of hits. Like, he's been very hittable.
Yeah.
And it's a little concerning. I mean, I think he's a guy that you look at. Does he start a postseason game for them? I don't know. Is he better used in that hybrid role where he can come in at any point? You know, maybe he tries to go through a lineup once as a starter or even as a reliever. Maybe the matchup is really good where you want him on a bunch of lefties. I think he's probably best deployed in that role. That, though, is reliant on Taiwan Walker, you know, being in decent shape to start, you know, a postseason game for you, right?
Because
he'd kind of be your third starter in that scenario. So a lot of moving pieces. I don't think it's the worst time to give Ranger a pause. They can sort of afford it. They have all these, you know, they have every Thursday off. They have, you know, I guess good thing they got Lorenzen, you know, because they would probably be looking at Nick Nelson in the starting rotation right now if they hadn't gotten Lorenzen. So I ate crow again because I thought that they should have had a better deadline and they should have gotten a hitter instead of a pitcher. But here they are really needing that other pitcher. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. They definitely need the pitching and thankfully they have it. Okay. Well, I think that'll about do it for Paul's twice annual existential crisis leading up to a Giants series. The Phillies have the Giants and the Cardinals through the weekend before the next time we all catch up with you ahead of Mike Trout's homecoming, even though he probably won't be ready to play.
I bet you he plays.
Oh, you think he's going to be back? Oh, yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, Logan O'Hoppe, Mickey Moniak, and then Shohei.
Mickey Moniak, who unfortunately has absolutely cratered this month after a nice little hot streak.
I couldn't believe I actually looked up his numbers the other day and I was like, holy cow, like what happened?
Bad.
He's got a 794 OPS now. Wait, hold on.
The season.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, he entered August with a 915 OPS.
Oh my God.
His August numbers are brutal. I don't even want to like read them off for fear of parental, you know, advisory guidance.
I'm just looking at like, I think he's going to be a solid big leaguer. I don't think he's an everyday guy, but oh my God, he's got 95 strikeouts and 8 walks this year.
Yeah. That's the biggest red flag.
Holy crap.
It is the biggest red flag. Look, you don't need to be proficient in Python or the R programming language to look at a guy's season stat line. And when you see somebody who bare minimum is striking out in 25% of his plate appearances, but the higher up it goes, the more you pay attention. If there is an imbalance that extreme in a dude's season line, you look at somebody like Moniak, who really, this is kind of historic now at this point, even in his last season in Philadelphia and then over to the Angels, he struck out 44 times in 112 PA and walked four times. This year, 95-8. That's in 270 plate appearances. He's striking out more than a third of the time, and he's walked eight times in 270. That is not a major league formula for success. There is, you can count maybe like two guys a year, maybe, who can make a big imbalance in strikeouts and walks work at the major league level.
Yeah, it like, you know, you got to hit 40 dingers at least.
Yeah, you got to have more power than Moniak has. And he had a nice little power streak for sure. But that always catches up to you.
Yeah.
You know, look at Ed Sosa. Ed Sosa did kind of the same thing. Yeah. And he cratered. Well, he fell off hard. I mean, he has other value. But like that's what happens on the offensive side. That is a huge red flag. Not to get off on too much of a tangent there. Anyway.
Well, I can't wait to see him.
Yeah. Giants, Cardinals, Angels. Big week in wild card land. And hopefully a big week for my mental fortitude. And I reach you next week with an intact mind. So, Matt, before we go, you got something up on the Little League Classic, right? Anything else you got up in The Athletic you'd like folks to know about?
I wrote a story at the end of last week, just kind of about, you know, Paul, you had mentioned this and this kind of got my gears turning. So I credit you for this, you know, just about the production they've gotten from, you know, like 26 and under hitters, which is very un-Phillies like. They don't traditionally get this kind of production from younger hitters. And I'm reluctant to call, like, you know, Alec Bohm just turned 27. Like, is he a young hitter? Not really. I mean, like, he's probably in his prime years, but he's played. This is his age 26 season. And I really enjoyed like getting perspective from Kevin Long and Bryce Harper. I remember vividly, you know, Bryce calling out the organization really after the 2021 season. He's like, you know, we need to develop hitters better. Like, we need more homegrown hitters, young hitters. And, you know, 2 years later, really that's coming to fruition. And they've got three solid guys, including Brandon Marsh, who have been quite productive for them this season. And you really look at the whole of the season, and obviously their stars need to be better, and they've been better of late, generally. But when you look back, I think what we're going to remember is the younger hitters, you're really picking those guys up for a good portion of the season.
Beautiful. Go check out Matt's stuff at theathletic.com. Thanks, as always, to all of you for checking in with us and hanging with us for another fun, objective, completely fact-based and emotionless session as we get ready for the Giants. Whoopee! For Matt, I am Paul. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.